Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. So much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Really glad you tuned in today, and a very happy Monday to you. Well, I'm excited for both hours today, working through both of these books. Such great content. I'm glad you're here today. You know, when you think about it, we're all called to work of some kind. But some of us work in negative environments. Others of us work in strong faith-based environments. What kind of environment do you work in? And how do we thrive in our calling? And how are we to thrive in that organization to which God has called us with in a positive and life-giving way? How do we respond to God's call? Well, Deanne Turner joins me. She's Vice President of Corporate Talent at Chick-fil-A to talk about her book, It's My Pleasure, The Impact of Extraordinary Talent and a Compelling Culture. So interesting. This book is so interesting. The behind-the-scenes philosophy of Chick-fil-A, of how they are so intentional about looking for great talent, about training great talent and keeping great talent, and about also always cultivating an atmosphere of growth and keeping the vision before them. I feel like no matter where you work, whether you work in the home or work outside the home, you're going to get something today that will help you steward your time, your treasures, your talents. Well, then second hour, Drs. Les and Leslie Parrott join me to explore seven questions you should ask before and even after you marry. Again, fantastic content in their book. Can't wait to get them on as well. I have a couple of quick announcements for you first. We are so honored and blessed to be partnering again this year with Angel Tree. And you think about it, Christmas is coming soon, and Angel Tree's goal is to reach children of prisoners who hope for a Christmas filled with joy. And Christmas time can be such a lonely time for these families and spouses whose loved one is in prison. And each gift of $14.58 will help you reach an Angel Tree child with a Christmas gift, with the gospel, and a loving message from their absent parent. So will you help us introduce these innocent children to their loving Savior today? Listen to one such story.
A father does the unthinkable. In a single moment of rage, Scott shakes his 6-week-old son, sending him to the hospital, and is convicted of aggravated battery and sentenced to 7 years in prison. His wife, Dusty, tries to sort out the source of that violent outburst.
We both came from abusive pasts. Scott, he did not come from a faith-based home at all.
Left alone to raise their 3 sons, Dusty went through 2 years of anguish.
I was just so full of anger. I hated him. We lost our home. I lost my job. I just blamed everything on him.
As time passed, the baby, Malik, healed from his injuries. But their middle son, Eli, matched his mother's anger toward his father in prison.
Eli felt the same hate that I was feeling because he sided with me.
Just as this family was hitting bottom, 3 events happened to unfold. Dusty was invited to church. Scott began talking to the prison chaplain. And that Christmas, the 3 boys, Dominic, Eli, and Malik, were invited to an Angel Tree party where they discovered gifts chosen just for them.
They were wrapped beautifully, and on the tag, it said, "Love, Daddy." They were kind of like, "This is from Dad? What's going on here?" And Malik got some Scooby-Doo pajamas, and he was totally obsessed with Scooby-Doo. So that was really great. And Eli, he just loves putting stuff together. So he got a big box of Legos. But they were amazed that Scott knew what they wanted. It was like the Lord was working through those gifts.
Dusty felt hope for the first time in a long while, but she still needed something from Scott. She went to visit him in prison.
As we sat down at the table, he instantly just broke into tears. told me how sorry he was. He had never confessed to me about what he had done.
Scott was not only broken, he was reborn.
God has really worked in his life, and he has connected with fellow believers in the prison, the chaplain.
The final angel tree blessing came when Dusty took the three boys to see their dad, especially for Eli, who had expressed so much anger.
When he saw my husband come through the doors, he ran and gave his dad the biggest hug. He said, "Thank you, Dad. Thank you for not forgetting about me." And he also thanked him for the gifts that he received on Christmas.
The Bible speaks of how anger is passed on through the generations. Will you join in prayer that this family and many others just like it continue to be healed?
God used Angel Tree in our lives to begin removing the anger and the enemy out of my children's hearts. Looking forward, I see our family just becoming one again, but this time with Christ in the middle.
That's just one of many stories. Think about that. $14.58, you'll be able to reach an Angel Tree child with Christmas gift, the gospel, and a loving message from their parent. And which leads me to my next quick announcement. It is the month of the great giveaway for Live the Promise. And what is it, you ask? Well, we are sending you on a mini mission trip. Here's the question. What's the best thing you can do with $15? What can God do through you? And $14.58, that's pretty close. Really, what do you have in your hand? Is it 5? Is it 10? Is it 100? The point is to send you out of your comfort zone to consider somebody outside your circle who has less than you and engage in a random act of kindness, a gift of kindness. Help somebody who needs the help. And then on December 17th, we'll devote the whole show for you to come back from your mission field, so to speak, and share your stories. Everybody who gets on the air will get some wonderful Christmas candy and a book off our Faith Radio shelf. Two of you will get a great giveaway gift basket full of lots of goodies. And it's just our hope and a desire to mobilize thousands of people to engage in random acts of kindness for those in need this season. If you need more information, go to the Live the Promise Show page on our website, myfaithradio.com. Okay, let me tell you about my first ever guest. We'll get her on the show. Deanne Turner is Vice President of Corporate Talent for Chick-fil-A, where she began her career, listen to this, more than 30 years ago. She serves on the boards of Kenya Project and Proverbs 31 Ministry. She loves being married mother of three children. You can find her on the web at deanneturner.com. Dear Deanne, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Susie. It's my pleasure to be here.
No, it's so nice to meet you. Well, we love to start out all conversations talking scripture. I love the passage you chose. Can't wait to hear what you have to say about it. Hebrews 12:15. See to it that no one misses the grace of God. Say more.
Sure. That even though I came to Christ when I was really young, about 7 years old, and walked with him most of my life, I really never understood the grace that came with it. For some reason, I had this vision of God as someone who was checking off what I was doing right and what I was doing wrong and was always keeping score. And I just missed this crucial part of my faith until I was older. And once I discovered it, which actually has something to do with my time in Africa, but once I discovered how wonderful, as the song says, the matchless grace of Jesus is, it became so important to me to be sure that others were living that abundant life that Christ intended to. And so it impacts as a life verse. It impacts behavior every day. And of course, I don't do it perfectly, but I have to remember that every person I encounter has their own story. And if I can pause and give them the gift of grace that God's given to me, then I think that just improves my relationships and my opportunities and my testimony with others.
Boy, it sure makes all the difference. I mean, I feel like grace, you know, makes a distinction between obligation and invitation, you know, where it's either drudgery and duty or it's a life-giving response to what God's already done for us. And then you can give more freely, you know, and with a heart of fullness. It's absolutely amazing, and it's so important that we not miss this grace. So I just love that you started with that. I want you to talk about how you first came to apply to Chick-fil-A. For one thing, your husband, just the story of your husband behind the scenes made me so smile. I love the persistence in that man. But talk about that story, if you would.
Sure. Well, I like to say it all began with a flat tire, and I'll explain that. But it started out that he had told me about Chick-fil-A. He had engaged there at the corporate office with some of the employees. He's a pastor at a church down the street. And I had applied a couple of times and already been turned down. All of that was at his urging. By the second time I was turned down there, I became very intrigued about this company that I had actually known all my life. I had grown up in Atlanta, and I was aware, of course, of the product and had eaten there all through my childhood and into my adult life. And so I'd become very intrigued with this culture, and I decided I very much wanted to be a part of it, but I couldn't figure out how to get an interview and much less get a job. And so one day he was at the church, and a lady had had a flat tire, and she came in and asked for the opportunity to use the telephone. And he said, "Oh, no worries. I'll change that tire for you." So he did. And when he was done, she gave him a coupon for a free Chick-fil-A sandwich. And he said, "Oh, do you work at Chick-fil-A?" And she said, "Well, I do, but my husband's been transferred out of state, so I've had to resign. And he said, "Oh, where do you work?" And she said, "Advertising." Well, that happened to be the very area of the business that I was trying to get a job. And so he got off the phone and called me immediately, and I called them, and the poor little woman on the other side of the phone that had been answering for the umpteenth time my questions, I said, "I hear you have a job, and I want to interview for it." And so I think that they finally said, "We've got to get this lady in so she'll leave us alone." And I did go in and interview for the job, and I went through a long process, and when I got done, they said, "Well, we'd like to offer you a job in human resources." And I went home and thought about it, and I thought, "Oh, those are such nice, friendly people in HR, because, you know, they're paid to be nice and friendly." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, I'll go work there in a couple of years. I'll know where all the job opportunities are, and I'll move to marketing at that time." And that was 30 years ago, and it hasn't happened yet.
Amazing. And you know what else just intrigued me so much, that you wrote that Jimmy Collins told you, because he was in charge of kind of the hiring process, I believe, at the time. He told you that it was his job to try to talk you out of the job. And you said, while at first you were taken aback by that comment, you now see the brilliance of it. Unpack that for us, if you would.
Sure, absolutely. And we continue to do that. But it has to do with this whole focus we have on long-term relationships. Our founder, Truett Cathy, believed that those relationships were a great part of why we've been so successful, whether it was with a supplier, an employee, a Chick-fil-A operator. Those long-term relationships contributed to that. So the way we got at that was to make sure both of us, the employee and Chick-fil-A, makes a very good decision on the front end. And what we like to say is, if you can be talked out of this today, that would be better than 6 months from now, when you may have given up another promising career or relocated your family or made major life-altering decisions. We want to be sure this is something that we can do together for a long, long time. And so one of the ways that we've done that over time is, whatever the role is that someone's applying for, we try to be sure that they've not only have we really checked them out, but they thoroughly checked us out to know exactly what they're getting into and can commit for a long-term relationship.
Such great wisdom. When we come back, Deanne, I want you to answer this question. What are some of the lessons you learned in those early years that have stuck with you? I mean, you've got a whole book, I think, but if you had to just give a synopsis of a few takeaway points that are always on the forefront of your mind from those early years, I'd love to know what they are. Talking to Vice President of Corporate Talent at Chick-fil-A, Deanne Turner. Title of her book is It's My Pleasure, The Impact of Extraordinary Talent and a Compelling Culture. We've got three copies to give away. If you're in a leadership role of any kind, or you aspire to be, you want a copy of this book. It's fantastic. 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484, or email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com, or with Deanne Turner when we come back. Okay, that's my brand new favorite Christmas album. We had Danny Gokey on last week. fantastic, humble, gracious guy. He's got a new Christmas album out, and that's a song off of that album. I'm Suzy Larson. This is Live the Promise. Loving my conversation with Deanne Turner. She's a VP of Corporate Talent at Chick-fil-A. Written a great book. It's titled It's My Pleasure, The Impact of Extraordinary Talent and a Compelling Culture. I've always been so intrigued by good leadership and bad leadership and the ripple effect. So intrigued by attitudes and how those just make all the difference. And so I asked Deanne this question before the break. Love for you to answer it now, Deanne. When you think back to these early years, you've been with Chick-fil-A 30 plus years now. What are some of those lessons, maybe even that surprised you in those early years, that are just at the forefront of your mind now?
One of the first things that comes to mind when you ask me that question is something I learned from our former president, Jimmy Collins. You mentioned him earlier, and Jimmy was a great mentor of mine and taught me a number of things. And one of the quotes very early in my career that I've never forgotten and I use often is this: it is kindness to refuse immediately what you eventually intend to deny. So if you think about those words, it's really the power of saying no quickly rather than dragging people through experiences only to be disappointed later. And so that has a lot of, in the workplace, has all kinds of ways to use that. We used it a lot in thinking about our hiring process. It was a lengthy hiring process. And if you knew that you were going down a path with someone very early on, what we didn't want to do is drag out that process, put them through a lot of unnecessary hoops, only to learn in the end that they're not getting that opportunity. And, of course, that would leave a bad, no pun intended, but it would leave a bad taste in their mouth for Chick-fil-A. And so that was one of the things that he taught me early on, and I found that that was a life principle. You know, even with my children, I use the example, and it's my pleasure, that when I was 16, I had been promised a car, and then my dad decided not to give me that, and what a disappointment that was. Although as an adult later, I certainly knew that was a good decision on his part. So it impacted the way my husband and I approached our children in thinking about when they would be 16, and we were sure to let them know that that wasn't going to happen. And they knew it from about the time they understood that they, when you turn 16, you get to drive a car. They knew they weren't getting one. And because it was kindness to tell them that, not to raise their expectations so that they wouldn't be disappointed later on. One final example of that, recently I had one of my staff members in my office and was telling me that I had this great candidate for the role that we had available, but she knew that the candidate's ultimate goals would not be fulfilled in our organization. And I said, well, do you want to steal her life? And she stopped for a minute, didn't quite understand what I was saying. And I said, that's what we do when we don't tell somebody immediately that things aren't going to work out the way they expect. And we want this person to be able to follow their calling and to achieve all the things they want to achieve, and we don't want to take that away from them.
Wow, such wisdom. So, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, I have more lessons if you want to hear them. That
yes,
the first
please.
One.
No, they're fantastic. Keep going.
The second one I think that stands out to be so powerful is something that can be counterintuitive too. And people think of the higher you are in an organization, the higher leadership role you have, the more perks you have and the more status you have. But at Chick-fil-A, leaders serve. And so it's just the opposite. We recognize that the key to our whole organization is that individual Chick-fil-A operator. We use that interchangeably with the term franchisee, but that Chick-fil-A operator who operates a restaurant, hires team members who serve Chick-fil-A guests, that's where it really happens at Chick-fil-A. And the rest of us are there to serve those people and help them create great business opportunities and do a great job serving guests. And so we say that at Chick-fil-A, leaders serve. And that means that if you're a leader, you're the first to arrive and the last to leave. You're the last one in line, not the first one, which, of course, is a biblical principle, and Chick-fil-A was founded on biblical principles. If people are being served at a meal, you're the last one to eat. If there's none left, then you won't eat. But it's a place where leadership is about serving others, and that's not what people generally think about in corporate America.
I remember a story in the book, Deanne, where you were fairly new, I think, with the organization, and you I can't remember if you were traveling with your husband, but you took a seat and you were, you know, in first class because that was where your ticket was. And then you looked up and watched the executives walk by you and go to the back of the plane. And it was such a, what a word picture, even what that is, because that's so not typical.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. I was a young administrator with the organization, and we were going to our annual conference. I'm so surprised to sit down in first class and then watch company executives go to the economy class.
Amazing. So core values at Chick-fil-A are integrity, loyalty, generosity, and excellence. How did your founder, Truett Cathy, come up with those?
You know, I think that when we say Truett came up with them, I think that the organization learned those things from Truett, and then we articulated it more than to say that Truett said, these are our core values. He lived it.
Excellent.
And it's what he walked and what he demonstrated. And then we found the words to articulate what he had done so that we all would model the same behaviors.
I remember reading a story in your book about a woman, I think she was a single mom, but she would go through the drive-thru. I never even thought that you could do this, but how interesting. She'd go through the drive-thru, make her order, then go park. So by the time she got her little one in the store, she could sit down and not have to be hauling that little one in line, standing in line waiting forever. And she parks, and somebody from inside the store comes out because it's raining with an umbrella to help usher her into the store. And those kinds of things are above and beyond the call of duty. How do you instill that kind of an attitude all the way, you know, to these many, many employees that you have?
Well, what's happened in those cases is our individual operators have actually, we started with this principle that we wanted to serve others. We wanted to go the second mile. And that was that came from our president, Dan Cathy, when he talked about the story, of course, of the Roman soldier, and as we know, the story in the Bible, who conscripted the man to carry his pack a mile. And Jesus told the story and said, and when that happens, you should carry it the second mile. And so we tried to take the what you would expect to happen when you come into a quick service restaurant, that you know, get speedy service served by in a clean environment by friendly people. And we tried to think of ways that we could take that to the next level that would be second mile service. Well, we can't do that as an organization as well as our individual operators can. And the story that you shared is an example of the kinds of things they come up with to better serve their customers. So there's no manual that says this is the way you do this, or that these are the activities you do, such as offering any parent for that matter. And this is not true at every – this is a location that's done that. Other locations have done that. But every operator has their own brand at the second mile service. And I actually think that's what is one of the amazing things about Chick-fil-A, about our culture, is that these 1,500 individual operators have their own way of doing these things, and yet as a guest you can have a consistent experience whether you're in Washington, D.C., or you're in Southern California, or you're in Minneapolis. All those can be very consistent experiences, but they're individual operators.
That's such a good way to put it, because you can consistently experience excellence and generosity, but how it plays out just really is indicative of that leader. And what's so amazing is these repeat customers, so the operator gets to know these customers, and then they respond out of their own heart of generosity. It's really just brilliant. I'd love to hear from you if you want to chime in. You ask Deanne some questions, 877-93-FAITH, or email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. More with Deanne Turner in a moment.
Good Father, it's who you are, it's who you are, it's who you are, and I'm loved by you, it's who I am, it's who I am, it's who I am.
Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Deanne Turner. She's Vice President of Corporate Talent at Chick-fil-A. She's got a fantastic book out titled It's My Pleasure, The Impact of Extraordinary Talent and a Compelling Culture. And Deanne, you wrote this. I love this. You said, I learned from Truett the importance of selecting and growing great talent and coaching that talent to persevere and strengthen a phenomenal culture. Truett always believed that if you select the right person again and again, that the collection of the character, competency, and chemistry of those people would develop and strengthen the culture over time. I just see a snowball effect, you know, one after another, just gaining power over time. A couple questions regarding that excerpt there. How do you coach your talent to persevere?
Great question. I think that, first of all, just having an optimistic spirit. That's one of the things we look for as we select Chick-fil-A operators, is optimism, thinking the best. So we really encourage that a lot. We try to keep an optimistic outlook towards everything we do. And, you know, things usually do work out. That old saying about 80% of the things you worry about never happen is very true. And so we try very hard to dwell on the positive and be optimistic about it. And we encourage that as, you know, both within our staff and our operators.
Would you say that part of the process, too, Deanne, is casting a vision? I mean, I'm thinking of these great, talented people who are get weary. We all get weary at times. About part of coaching perseverance is to cast a vision for how they are not only, you know, that there's a pathway for them here, but they're adding strength, overall strength to the culture. Do you know what I'm saying? Where they're part of a bigger story. Do you find yourself casting the bigger vision for them as well?
Yes, and that is one of the things that Truett did so well from very early on. Is one of his, you know, he often said, we are not in the chicken business, we're in the people business. And when you can connect yourself to something bigger than yourself and bigger than a chicken business, but something that impacts lives, that makes a huge difference about being able to persevere when you know that you actually have an impact. And so to give you an example of that, I love one of the things that Truett enabled Chick-fil-A staff and operators to do, which was to go on what's called serve trips. And you can learn more about that model in the book. But serve trips, and which allow individuals to go and do all kinds of things, but primarily teach our leadership principles to people that ordinarily wouldn't have access to them. So they're international trips. In the meantime, not only do they teach leadership skills, but because of this opportunity, there have been schools and orphanages and built and wells for clean drinking water drilled and feeding programs for the hungry and AIDS clinics and all kinds of things all over the world that have been provided to serve others, places where people will never eat a Chick-fil-A sandwich. Places he'd never heard of Truett Cathy, and he'd never been there, and yet his influence and his impact through what the generosity he allowed had this amazing impact to millions of people around the world. And for me, I know that helps. That is a big part of why I'm a part of Chick-fil-A, is to know that what I do has that kind of impact. And so when, you know, there are a few struggles and you stop and think, gosh, you know, we're having this kind of international impact from a domestic company, I know that gives me a lot of enthusiasm to get up and do what I need to do for the day.
You know, he clearly had wisdom beyond his years, because it seemed like almost, I would say, maybe in the 80s, early 90s, there was once again such an emphasis on ministry equals calling, period. But people need to be in the marketplace and be doing excellent things there and carrying their faith there in a way that where their work is so excellent, I think, you know, that people want to know about the hope that is within them. And I just feel like the fact that he could steward excellence and generosity and the kind of courage he did in the marketplace, because once I think you succeed there, then people want to hear what you have to say. And, you know, my hubby's a construction project manager, and he was one of the senior guys on the Minnesota Twins Stadium. And he's, you know, it was a several-year process, but you can be inside that structure, steel stud framing, fireproofing, all this mess and noise. But he would constantly tell his guys, you're building a place where dreams and memories are born. Don't forget that. And he said it just, you could tell the look on their face, because all that to say, we can always equate something important with being ministry, but I think we've got to step back and say we can serve with excellence and humility and with vision anywhere we are, can't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you point out about how do you serve in a secular place, or how do you live out your faith through what you said about what Truett did. And, you know, he was not somebody in those early years particularly, but he didn't necessarily stand up and preach sermons and that kind of thing. He lived, he walked the talk. Hmm. And he started that in his very first restaurant in 1946. And people came in and he personally served them, and he knew their story. He knew their order and their story. And people would eat with him three times a day that worked at the nearby Ford plant and worked for Delta Airlines there nearby his original restaurant. They'd come in three times a day for the good company.
Wow.
And so he was just that kind of person, and he taught others to serve the same way. And so because he walked the walk, then people wanted to know what was behind all that. And that's when he became more open about sharing that he based his business on biblical principles.
Well, isn't that the way it is for all of us, Deanne? Because if you're perpetually late for work and you do shoddy work and you have a bad attitude, you can evangelize all you want, but there'll be no credibility. I just think to show up in your workplace and steward it to the best of your ability because of a conviction, because you're part of a bigger story, whether people around you see it or not, I think that suddenly gives you a voice if and when you're called to step up and give an account, you know?
And it's honoring to the Lord, and working is unto the Lord, as he says in Colossians, as the Bible says in Colossians.
Indeed. So you talk about this, you know, collection of character, competency, and chemistry. I'd love for you to just speak to the process beforehand, because I would think, you know, when you think about a good work culture where you've got a chemistry among the coworkers and they trust each other and they have a you know, collaborative vision, I mean, you'd have to guard that as far as who you allow into the mix, because I think each person either strengthens it or not. I mean, how do you talk about the hiring process to filter these things through?
Some of this goes back to what I was saying earlier about how we allow people to get to know us really well and self-select. So, and that's where chemistry comes from. People think, oh, you have this long hiring process, you must not be able to make up your mind about who you want to hire. That's really not the case at all. We obviously have the ability to figure out if people have the skills and talents required of a particular role. But what we really want to happen is for that individual to get to know this culture and this chemistry, and to spend time in our environment. And if they're going to be a Chick-fil-A operator, to spend time with operators and in a restaurant and understanding what all that is about. So we feel like all that time we invest on the front end of allowing people to get to know us pays off, because we don't spend a lot of time on the back end making a lot of changes. That's why we have retention rates among our corporate staff at 96% and among our Chick-fil-A operators at 95%.
That's amazing.
That's because of all the time we put up front in making sure there's a match there.
So excellent. I'm not sure where this idea originated. Maybe you would know. But someone once said that we should be slow to hire and quick to fire. Speak to that idea, if you would.
You said slow to hire and quick to fire?
Yes, exactly. Where sometimes we're hasty because we need to fill a position, and then we prolong it ad nauseum, you know?
Yeah. Well, I would say that's definitely, I would say we're probably at Chick-fil-A have been known to be slow to do both, and I'll explain that. We're slow to hire because we are making a very careful decision and asking the candidate to make a very careful decision too. But we're also slow to fire. Truett was really known for, once you made that decision, he was expecting, that's why he asked you to make a careful decision on the front end, because he didn't want to make changes. And if there were changes to be made, in those days you had to go right to Truett, and nobody left our organization that he wasn't aware of the circumstances. And so if you had a situation, you go and share it with him, and he'd look you in the eye and say, so what have you done about it? What other training have you offered? What other coaching have you offered? Yeah, you go back and you work on it a little bit longer. And so that was when he made those kind of commitments, he was very serious about it. And he expected us to work very hard to give somebody every opportunity to succeed before we made a change.
Excellent. That's
so very much his philosophy.
I love it. I think that, because there are times I think someone would get fired quickly and it rings their bell, and truth be told, if you pull the covers back, that, you know, maybe expectations weren't clearly communicated, so they didn't even have a chance to reset and correct. So, wow, that's really good. One thing you said in the book, too, was that culture is the soul of the organization. Wow, that really hit me hard. Explain what you mean by culture being the soul. Talk more about that, if you would.
As I was writing that, I was looking for just the word that described describe what a culture means to an organization, and I couldn't think of anything that just where everything rests, you know, the purpose and the mission and the core values rest in the culture. And when I thought about it as an individual, it's like, well, I think that's where my personal purpose and mission and values, it's the soul of who I am. And so it seemed to make the connection to me that it would be the soul of the organization. And it can be very elusive to describe, but we call it living life together at Chick-fil-A when we talk about our culture. And I guess in a way, in a biblical principle sense, it's like being knitted together in that way.
It seems like culture would also, the analogy would also fit like that it's like a garden, that it needs to be maintained and nurtured and cared for and guarded. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you, when you look at just because of the reality of personalities that bump up against each other, our self-life shows mm-hmm. sometimes, you're going to need to love and forgive and make allowances for each other. Just that's just the reality. Would you compare that then to a garden where you're tending and weeding and all those kinds of things?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great analogy. And I mean, that's just true of just about any of business processes, whether it's culture or other things, that it performance. It requires that constant tending to. And I think that Truett was always just extraordinary at spending that time and cultivating and revisiting. One of the things he did on an annual basis was bring all, and we still do, bring all of the operators, all of the staff members and their spouses to an annual, we call it seminar, but it's a convention type thing where everyone can come together, review business results, plans for the next year, have inspiration, motivation, recreation, and spend time together as the Chick-fil-A family. And that did so much to grow our culture. And that's one of the examples of where he did that weeding and constant tending to the garden in that way.
Excellent. Talk about his commitment to be closed on Sundays and people's response to that decision.
Yeah, early on, that was a decision that Truett made immediately when he opened his first restaurant in 1946. Because he felt like everyone needed a day of rest. He would say if a person can't make a living in 6 days, they might need to be doing something else. And it was really about rest at the beginning. And, his personal values, of course, were that Sunday was a day, was the Lord's day. But for the business, it was certainly about rest. And in those days, most businesses were closed on Sunday. As he began to open the chain starting in 1967 and going into malls, he had a little bit more resistance from the landlords, especially Premier Malls, that he would not open on Sunday. And he would not compromise that value. That was part of his integrity. And so early on, he missed out on some opportunities to be in some malls. Soon they understood that that Chick-fil-A made as much money in 6 days as many of the others made in seven. And we became a sought-after tenant in those environments. And as we went into freestanding restaurants in 1985, it continued that we were respected for that. People would ask Truett, they would say, Truett, are you concerned about how much money you lost by not being open on Sunday? And he said, no, I've been far more concerned of how much I would have lost had I chosen to open on Sunday. And he had his priorities in order. And that's the history behind that. And here in the second generation, his children have committed to continue that practice as well.
And it's proven right. Jesus says things are proven right by their fruit, and you've seen the fruit of it. We've got one segment left with the intern, and when we come back, I want you to speak to the Truett's idea that we can't get bigger unless we get better. You don't see that perspective often. And then also to look at some criteria for selecting the right people. So interesting. Talking to Deanne Turner of Chick-fil-A. Don't go away. More with her when we return. Having a great day today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Deanne Turner today. She's Vice President of Corporate Talent at Chick-fil-A. Title of her book is It's My Pleasure, The Impact of Extraordinary Talent in a Compelling Culture. And Deanne's been talking about how Chick-fil-A's founder, Truett Cathy, so impacted this organization and her life personally. And one of the things that he used to say is that we can't get bigger unless we get better. Wondering, Deanne, if you would speak to that person today, maybe they're a small business owner or just a leader of an organization. What are some questions that they should ask themselves about getting better before they stretch and strive to get bigger?
The origination of this was that we were making aggressive plans to grow, and Truett would see things that just didn't necessarily reflect excellence in everything. And he wanted to make sure that as we did grow, that we really were improving our service, and that, you know, the food was excellent every time a guest ordered something, and that everything was top-notch in the way we delivered to the guest. And so that was his request, is let's focus on getting better, not always about getting bigger. And it came from watching or organizations where Truett saw them grow very, very quickly and lose their niche in the marketplace, you know, and he would see small organizations grow, and then all of a sudden they didn't have the same customer care that they'd had or the same attention to the details. And he did not want that to happen to Chick-fil-A. So that was the root of that statement. So I think it's really important as an organization grows to be sure that they're scaling all the thing, all the areas in which they've been successful. So asking myself, you know, as a business owner, asking myself, is my business scaling along with it? Is everything as good as it was when it was just one location? Now I have three locations. Are all three of those operating at peak performance? And if not, before going to location number four, I think it's good to stop and evaluate and bring everything up to par, so that as you grow, you don't just grow and then eventually become obsolete because you haven't scaled the service and quality at that size.
And you think about anything that when it's too much too soon, it's not sustainable, and it's like a quick rise and a quick fall. So it does take a measure of restraint, I would think, to cast a vision and stay in step with it, right?
Yes. And sure, just admired organizations. He had so much loyalty to certain suppliers, but he admired the longevity of companies that were able to scale their products and service at that level, and he wanted that for Chick-fil-A.
Okay, you said this too. You said when people find their calling in their work, it changes everything. Unpack that, if you would, Deanne.
It really goes back to some of what we were talking about impacting earlier, but, you know, I've watched people try to do something that God never intended for them to do. It just wasn't the right fit for them. But when they find that thing, for me, it was all about when I recognized I had been in the advertising business. I thought I was supposed to pursue that whole calling of marketing. But then when I got into human resources and I found what God had really gifted me to do was to help other people find their path, then I knew that that was what would, as I say in the book, sizzle in my soul every day. And if you're doing something that you really weren't called to do, you really weren't gifted to do, it's a miserable experience. It's just a job. In fact, I say in the book, a job, you know, is on your resume, but a calling echoes in your epitaph. And that's true. You begin to actually do legacy building when you're living inside of a calling that God has for you.
I mean, how often do we meet people that maybe feel stuck in their job because they've got a mortgage and a family, but they also resent it because they're not doing their calling, and maybe they're in their 40s, early 50s going, it's too late for me now. But wow, I mean, you think about in Scripture how many times God promoted somebody out of old age to do something great. Maybe offer a word of encouragement for that person listening today.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking just the other day, Truett, even in his business, we were calculating when things really started to pick up for Chick-fil-A. He was 53 years old by the time he was that the business was really growing rapidly and expanding. And, you know, a lot of people at 53 are thinking about retiring. He was literally just getting started, and he went for 40 more years. In his 90th year, he opened a totally different restaurant concept than anything he had had. I think he's a great example of that. And you mentioned the biblical examples of where God called people at different times. And so I think, you know, and I've learned this the older I get, I understand exactly the dilemma that people face, but we simply must ask God to make the way, and He will.
Indeed.
He will provide the path.
Well, you offer some tips in your book for discovering your calling. I'd love to just highlight a few of these. We'll be praying in about 3 minutes or so, but I got to address some of these. They're so good. One of them regarding our calling, you said it's the thing that gets you up in the morning. And it resonates not just with your heart and mind, but it sizzles in your soul. And you said, for me, it's the excitement I get as I think about both developing the people who work for me and seeing them achieve their goals and dreams. So the thing that gets you up in the morning, if someone's listening today going, it's been so long since I've thought about what gets me up in the morning, how can they identify that passion?
Well, sometimes it's great to ask someone else what they see in you. Find a truth teller in your life and say, okay, what is it that you see in me that I'm not using? What has God gifted me to do? And sometimes it's someone, it might be a spouse. At this point in my life, I have to tell you, it's one of my children that has helped me with that. It was my 15-year-old that wouldn't leave me alone saying, Mom, when are you going to write that book? When are you going to write that book you always talked about? And so sometimes it can be all kinds of people in your life that can speak that truth into you. And, of course, we know God uses people to do those things. So that is a critical component, is asking others. I think the other thing that, if we get really tactical, there are all kinds of assessments. And the great thing is you can find them online now. You had to go to a career counselor or someone to help you with those things. But now you can just go online and search, career assessment and find those type of opportunities to give you some insight into what your skills are and what your calling might be. But I think, and I had a story, but I think we're limited on time, so I'll let you ask another question.
Well, I was going to say that, your next point, it kind of speaks to what you're just saying. It's what others tell you do best. Sometimes we let those things go, or people are repeatedly saying, wow, you've got a gift of hospitality, or wow, you're organized. But we dismiss those because we're our own worst critic. But oftentimes, if we start to pay attention to what people are reflecting back to us, it'll help us identify something that maybe seems easy to us, but isn't so much to others, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's very true. And I think another part of that I talk about in It's My Pleasure, it's that moment when you feel God's pleasure. And I actually used to have that on my computer every day. When do you feel God's pleasure? And there would be moments during my day, whether it was just I stopped to help some. I felt it for me, it was in coaching. So my staff would come in and they'd have a really difficult problem. And I wouldn't tell them the answer, but I would help them discover the answer. And I would see the light come on for them, and I would see them grow in confidence. It was like, that's when I felt God's pleasure, when I was impacting other people to become the best of who they could become.
And it all started with a flat tire. Just an amazing story. I love it. I mean, God leads us even when we don't know we're being led. That's the amazing thing. If we really want to do what He wants us to do, He'll get us there if we just continue to respond. This has been so good, Deanne. Appreciate it so much. Would you pray for that person listening who feels utterly stuck, but maybe there's a little flutter in their heart going, maybe there's still a chance for me? Would you pray for that person?
Absolutely. Dear Father, we thank you for this blessed time today. And I just lift up those individuals who are looking for their opportunity and what you would have them to do. God, please put that right in front of them. Open their eyes to that. They would have eyes to see, ears to hear, especially to hear your voice in their life, that you would stir their heart to the very thing that you're calling them to do. I pray for that person right now, God. Ask that you reach down and deliver that to them. It's in Christ's name I pray. Amen.
Well, Deanne, thank you for all of the great work that you do and for giving us time out of your busy schedule today. We sure appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure, Susie. Thank you. I enjoyed being with you so much.
And you definitely check out Deanne's book, It's My Pleasure.
You're a good, good father. It's who you are. It's who you are. For answers far and wide, but I
just want to listen to that whole song. Love that song. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. You just heard Hour 1 of Live the Promise. Coming up next, I'll be talking to Drs. Les and Leslie Parrott about how to save your marriage before it starts. But if you're married already, these questions apply to you too. Great content, great information. Don't go away. Hour 2 is up next.